in Carver. It's not in Carver. So welcome to the Carver Board of Aldermen regular meeting. It's Tuesday, June 21st, first day of summer.
Boy, and I couldn't wait for the weather to change. Yeah, that was...
Yep. And we're ready to roll. We have one speaker from the floor.
Matters what? Not on the agenda.
Ed Kerman.
Good evening, ladies. Thanks for having me tonight. As you know, I've been before this board and previous boards about a number of very important things, and tonight is no different. About something very important, and that is to acknowledge and thank your manager, Steve Stewart, for his service to the community. And I don't have to tell you Steve's been great to work with, but Steve has been great to work with. And as you also would know, there are occasions where it's really important for the town staff, Owosso staff, to work closely together, to communicate, to coordinate, to look forward to serve the community. And we've just never been disappointed in any of the town staff. They're always great about reaching out and helping, and I know that's indicative of Steve's leadership. And we know when Steve's not here, that's going to continue because it's a very fine team. But we really do appreciate, Steve, your service. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ed. Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Really appreciate that. That was very thoughtful, Ed, to make sure to come down and thank Steve. And I just want to check, some folks just walked in. Tim Jones, Jerry Glass. Okay. All righty.
Maybe they'll come back.
Okay. Mr. Manager?
All right. The consent agenda is approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of June 7th and June 14th. Item 2 is authorization for the town manager to award a construction contract for the Elm Street sidewalk project. Item 3 is authorization for the town manager to award a contract for the Morgan Creek design and engineering. Item 4 is a personnel ordinance change amending the town code to reflect changes to the Family and Medical Leave Act and to provide a clarification of insurance benefits. Item 5 is an appointment to the Economic Sustainability Commission. And item 6 is a request to approve designation of fund balance for fiscal year 2010-2011 budget items not yet spent or encumbered.
Move the items.
I'd like to pull number 4.
Okay. Are items 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6 seconded?
Yes, I seconded.
Okay. With that, all those in favor of the items?
Aye.
Okay. None opposed? And matter passes. Item 4. Go ahead, Lydia.
Yeah, item 4. This has to do with amending the town code to reflect changes to the Family and Medical Leave Act, and it's all in proper order. And I just had a comment to make about it, and that is that it kind of spells out folks that are permitted to apply for family medical leave pursuant to federal law. And it also, if you kind of read you know, the wording of it, oftentimes it makes reference to a child, and there actually has been a recent, within the last 2 years, administrator interpretation of that wording that has drawn all children that are cared for under folks that are exercising kind of like ex facto parenting. So that covers a lot of situations we can imagine where folks might have kids that need to be covered under that. But I was going to ask the board and or you know, our attorney or whatever, if it's possible for us to consider somehow having our policy also include partner, because, you know, it just says spouse, and that's something that I don't think we've caught before or covered before, so it might be something to look into in terms of amending it from Carver's perspective.
I think that is had been an oversight, and it's an oversight I think we should correct without a big to-do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whatever action we need to take to ask staff to look into that and to come back with whatever kind of amendment we need in the file, yeah, or whatever, I'd like to make that motion.
And
I mean, is it possible to do it now?
Town code modification does not require a public hearing, so I mean, we could do it tonight if the board's that's okay. The board.
So if we just add it and/or partner, with
well,
that?
And/or domestic partner. I think we have other references to domestic partner in our code, and we kind of have a definition of domestic partner.
Yeah.
So I'd like to make move that we have also add domestic partner to that provision.
And/or domestic partner.
Pardon me.
And/or domestic partner.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
So what I'm looking at is in 4-65-3. Subparagraph 3, that might be amended to read, to care for a spouse and or domestic partner, then continuing on with child or parent.
And it looks like also number 5, it talks about spouse. So, also, I mean, Bob, I kind of looked over the whole kind of code section today. I don't know if it's referenced a little bit elsewhere in that code or not, but anywhere where it makes reference to spouse to also add or domestic partner, I think is what my motion is.
And would that include the parents or children of the domestic partner? Because I think, you know, there are times when you would take care of your mother-in-law, mm-hmm. right? So it would be and or the parents or children of the domestic partner.
Right. That's my concern. So to have that covered. So that's the motion I'd like to make, if it's possible to do that without it coming back to us. I think we all understand the intent of my motion.
I'm not so sure that I'm very comfortable with just doing a blanket wherever it says spouse saying, because we have to look at context too. So I mean, I'd rather make sure that we've got it all covered. If we're looking at an overarching
Exactly.
Could look at that next week?
Sure. Well, if it's possible, get back next week, that'd be great.
Sure.
Okay, so I take that as a motion. Jackie's second. All those in favor? Sammy, we're looking at item 4.
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then opposed, and then carries.
Thanks for finding that, Lydia.
Thank you.
And thank you for that clarification, Bob. Okay. All right, so with that, we're on to the adoption of budget.
I think we've had excellent presentations on the budget. We've had a public hearing on the budget once again, and it's a reason for us to deny Steve's request to retire, which I don't think he knows we're allowed to deny that, but we can. Well, I think that was overridden last month, along with some other stuff. So I think, you know, once again, we thank Steve and particularly our staff for bringing us a incredible budget during an incredibly hard time. I don't feel a need for a lot of discussion, so I'd like to move approval with gratitude. Of the 2011-2012 Town of Carver budget.
I second that.
Okay, no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. None opposed?
Steve has an end of schedule of fees.
Well, there are actually 6 resolutions, the budget works, and then 5 other resolutions if you wanted to include all those resolutions as part of the motion.
Including the 6 resolutions.
Yeah, A through F. I did have one question that I don't know that it pertains to the budget information as laid out, but I wanted to have a better understanding that with Orange County and the change in the tip fee, is that going to come out of the general fund or?
Well, if you recall the action you all took last week, that that payment would come out of the green tract funds.
I had another question, Steve, for the fuel contingency account. I was just curious for like how much that is.
It's $20,000.
$20,000. And so that would cover a significant rise in fuel costs if it were to happen.
Maybe.
I don't know about significant. It would cover a rise. I mean, we hope not to use it. I think, unless George recalls differently, we've had it for several years, and I don't think we've had to tap into it.
Oh, okay.
But,
so
but things particularly this year have been so volatile. It seems to have settled down for the moment, but who knows what it might be like over the next few months.
Right. Okay, but great.
If it's not spent, it just goes back into our the town's fund balance.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Okay, so was our motion, did we already vote on the motion, including the five?
Yes,
the six
attachments. Yes. Okay. Is that okay, Steve?
I'm sorry. Kathy was saying something.
Have we done what we've needed to do?
We're good on it?
Yeah. Okay.
We got our budget.
All right. We got our budget. Yep. All right. The update on the surface water protection and
Before we get to that, what Kathy was showing me is that the two gentlemen that had originally signed up, I think we're speaking with our economic and community development director, and so they weren't in here when the board was listening to comments from the floor. So I think they are here and want to be recognized.
Sure. Tim Jones and Jerry Glass.
Yeah, thank you.
Come to the front.
Yeah, come on up.
You get to be on TV.
Yep.
And if you want a copy, you can get that too.
And Madam Vice Mayor, you might remind them of the time limit.
Yes, we have a 3-minute time for guest speakers.
Okay, we'll be very brief. And if I'll read from my notes, try to be brief and concise.
Sure.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Tim Jones, and this is Jerry Glass. I've been working with Jerry and his wife Sherry for the past 2 years to develop and launch a startup business in the Chapel Hill Carborough area. Unfortunately, Sherry's traveling, can't be here. We plan to open a business as a combination of a juice and smoothie bar targeted to families and children with a cafe intended to attract adult participatory sports enthusiasts, specifically bicyclists, softball, soccer players, kayakers, frisbee players, and the like. We believe our business will be a positive addition to the downtown of Carborough and provide a nice place to get together to have a healthy blended drink and get together with your friends after the game. We know Carborough cares about the community and the businesses that operate within it. A good example of that interest is the Carborough Evolving Loan Fund, which was established in 1986. The unique program is a wonderful way for the town to be involved in the effort to build a local economy by supporting job creation and populating the town with businesses that are compatible with community values. We've learned over the years this fund has provided dozens of business loans to many members of our community, such as the Carborough Citizen Newspaper, Neal's Deli, and the Cycle 9 Bicycle Shop, among others. We're here for two reasons. As local residents and business people, we would like to provide some constructive input to the town by describing our recent experiences applying for a loan under the program. And we have two concerns about it and believe that the processes have written merits a review and possible rewrite and updating of the procedures. Secondly, because of the way the loan process was conducted in our case, we would like to respectfully request that the Board of Aldermen make an exception to the usual process and consider our application directly on an expedited basis, hopefully before the summer recess. Possible. I don't think Dan Coleman's here, but he was in the meeting, and as he knows, a few weeks ago we submitted an application for a loan. We filled out the application, developed the accompanying financial information with the assistance of the North Carolina Small Business and Technology Development Center, which we call SBTDC for short, which has helped Carborough with numerous applications for such loans in the past. We had worked closely with these consultants for many months to develop a realistic business plan to make sure we fulfill the criteria for the loan under the program. Part of the loan process is written for the Economic Sustainability Commission to review each application and decide whether or not to forward the application to the Board of Aldermen for a decision whether or not to grant the loan. We submitted our completed application on a Friday, made a brief presentation to this commission the following Wednesday evening. We were quite surprised that the commission included several individuals that had apparent conflicts of interest and that they were potential competitors to the business that we were proposing to start. Naturally, we were very concerned about releasing our confidential business plans to potential competitors, but more importantly, and we don't know whether these people will participate in any formal vote on our application, but we would expect that someone with such a conflict would recuse themselves even from discussions concerning the application. We believe, number one, the loan process procedure should be revised to specifically and clearly address this. No one with such a conflict of interest should be expected or allowed to participate in discussion or decision about making a loan to a potential competitor.
That's your time.
Okay. And then, basically, they didn't get a chance to review the financial information on a timely basis, and so we really feel that it was a hampered process and that they need more time to review the financials ahead of time, and we'd like to, request that our application be reviewed by the board.
I'd like to refer this to staff for a report on what happened.
ask that we please get the report next Tuesday, so if we feel we need to act on it, that we would be able to.
And I also, as being the liaison to the Economic Sustainability Commission, we haven't gotten the Economic Sustainability Commission's response, have we?
Well, we'll be glad to provide a more formal report next week, but the ESC has not taken any action. They've asked, or planning to ask, as I understand it, and Annette can speak, she was at the meeting, has asked for more information. So nobody, as I understand it, has voted on anything, so there's not been no conflict of interest because nobody's voted, and that's a pretty serious allegation to, put out there.
If I may, the chairman of the commission called Sherry the day after the meeting and told him that the commission decided not to forward the application to the alderman. That's why.
And then it was a dead deal.
Right.
Well, and I shared with Ron Illinich with the small business last week in Annette's absence. He was at a conference that there had been no action taken. So he was supposed to have shared that information with you all. And if he didn't, I'm sorry for that. But Annette can speak for it. I assume, Randy, you were at that meeting, but I don't believe there was any formal action taken.
That's good to hear. We were just, we were very surprised because the next day he called us and said, we're not going to afford it.
Yeah.
And so we're surprised.
Let's get that staff report. Actually, Jackie made the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed. Yeah, go ahead.
Y'all can have a seat.
Okay. Thank you.
Could the staff report include, for example, what other towns do? Because there are different definitions of conflict of interest. And I want to be very careful that we do not do conflict of interest on a case-by-case basis, that there is some bright line test that everybody can understand, and such that there has to be a definite bright line test, because what some people consider to be conflict of interest, other people don't consider to be conflict of interest, and vice versa. So I want to make that clear right now.
Well, my suggestion would be that we ask our attorney,
because
another town is doing something they're not doing, it doesn't mean they're doing it the right way. And I had talked with Annette about consulting and with Ron Illinich, because he made that same comment about consulting with our attorney to make sure there was no issue, because, again, that's a very serious allegation to make.
And one of the first we've ever heard since we've been doing the program.
And especially since
I don't think anybody involved in this wants there to be even the appearance of such a thing. But,
and that's the first
I've ever heard of anything like that.
We certainly have had people that own food establishments being very, very supportive. You know, this is a supportive community, not necessarily a cloak and dagger community. So, anyway, it'd be interesting to get the report back from
Bob. We'll take a look at that. And also, to be clear, I mean, there's in the law, there's what's the statutes define what a legal conflict of interest is. So, I mean, there is a test that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if the town of Carborough wants to adopt some different
I'm not even suggesting that. If there's a test out there that we can just look at the situation,
we just want to know what it is.
We can find that for you very simply. So,
okay. No problem.
That won't be a problem.
Okay.
I'm happy with that.
Okay. So we'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. All right. Now we're on to the surface water protection and restoration activities.
Okay. Randy,
10 minutes early.
Environmental planner.
So the purpose of this agenda item is to update you all on activities we've been involved with as staff related to our creeks in Carborough. And generally these can be talked about as non-regulatory efforts and regulatory efforts. The regulatory efforts being driven by state and federal regulations. And so this is what I'm going to talk about, benthic monitoring or Olin Creek watershed restoration team activities and MPDS permit and and things on the horizon with the Jordan Lake rules. Benthic monitoring, this is something we've been doing for a decade now. We have a contractor we've been working with for several years who's been very helpful and sampling in a very, he's a national expert and has been sampling in a very thoughtful way on our creeks. The most recent sampling that was done this past March was a little bit of a flag in that some of the aquatic insects that we had seen in the past in the creek weren't present this time. And so that's something we're going to have on our radar, for looking at in the coming days and months. And the real question, or one of the things that the bug, just looking at the bugs in themselves, doesn't necessarily tell us is why are they or are they not here? And one of the things we've known in this that's been happening the past decade has been ongoing drought situations, and this past year was one of the worst we've seen. And so that's certainly one of the stresses to the aquatic life in the creek. Whether there's other stresses that are also impacting the situation is something we need to look very closely at in our ongoing monitoring. And the report's up on the website, and it goes into a great deal of detail, which I'm not planning to do tonight. I did want to mention one specific observation that was somewhat new this year that wasn't necessarily recognized in the past, is that there's a particular type of algae called a filamentous blue-green algae that can be a sign of imbalance in the creek system that was recognized this past spring. And it may be contributing to the stress and what we see in the aquatic insect community. The way that works is that during the day, this proliferation of this algae photosynthesizes and produces oxygen, but at night, it actually is a drain on the oxygen resources of the creek, and the lower oxygen in the creek can thereby impact the benthos. I have a picture of that just in the next slide. I also want to mention that one of the things we've been doing in the past couple of years is we've been expanding the number of sites we look at with our benthos and looking at some tributaries. And we actually, there's two tributaries that are showing encouraging signs for the health and diversity of the aquatic community. One of these is an unnamed tributary that runs basically from up just around Calvander on the west side of Portland Creek. It's an unnamed tributary through Sunset Creek and Barrington Hills, and then joins Portland Creek down in Carolina North. And it's a very healthy benthic community on that creek, even during the drought period. So that was very interesting. And as well, there's an unnamed tributary on the PH Craig property that was showing a very healthy aquatic insect community. This is not a picture of particularly, I didn't have a camera when I was out there on Bowling Creek that showed what the filamentous blue-green algae is. So this is just a generic slide I found on the internet from a site that I'm not certain of, but it gives you some sense of what this type of algal bloom looks like. Mm-hmm. With Bowling Creek Watershed Restoration, I want to just very, very quickly kind of recap where we've been in the past year and talk about something that's on the horizon. We finished a restoration project at Baldwin Park. This was a ceremony that we had back in late March to recognize the completion of the effort. See the rain garden there to the left of the basketball court and the new community garden. Very grateful to have some elected officials that came out that day and helped recognize in an official way the completion of this project, which was one of the things we were required to do under the grant to actually have a dedication ceremony. And this is what one of the two creeks flowing through the park looks like post-restoration. I don't have a before picture that shows exactly what it looked like before the restoration, but essentially to the left of the creek was quite a notable stream bank erosion situation with about a 5-foot unprotected and eroding stream bank that's now been stabilized. And I think personally, aesthetically, it's been quite a nice enhancement to the park and to the neighboring properties.
It's beautiful.
Another thing that happened this past year, briefly mentioned it to you some months ago, was an effort out of McDougall School to put in a demonstration rain garden. This is the culmination of a volunteer day of activities out there with all the 8th grade science classes helping with the final stages of putting the rain garden in. And the thing I wanted to mention today is that through support from the Friends of Bowling Creek, video has been prepared on the efforts that day, and a really, really outstanding job was done. This is just the title of actually two videos that were created, one for the rain garden, and also there was a video made related to the cistern that was installed at the same time. So we put those up on our website. Very grateful to Friends of Bowling Creek and Kara Biasuki, who is a videographer who helped support that project. With a lot of donated time. On the horizon, we're getting ready to, under also the 319 grant efforts, to do a restoration project on Dry Gulch. Dry Gulch is the creek that flows not too far from here, starting over near Greensboro Street and flowing down to Bowling Creek, basically between Bowling Creek Drive and Hannah Street. And where we're looking at, right in, this is the circle at Pacifica, right as you enter Pacifica, and so this is Hannah Drive down at the bottom, and Bowling Creek Drive is up here. The project area is, as shown in the red hatching here, the green lines and the green points are, the points are manholes and the green lines are sewer lines here, and I've got another slide that shows more details about the project itself here in a moment. But this is the essence of the problem that will be fixed there. There's a stream bank that's very rapidly eroding. It was one of the 10 priority sites identified in a study back in 2007 in the whole Bowling Creek watershed for restoration opportunity. And now we have the grant funding to help support that work. This is showing what a conceptual plan that's been put together by North Carolina State University, who's given us support on the project, what they envision the project involving. So basically what we have here is the existing channel is shown in the orange lines, so that the channel is flowing like this. And the realignment of the channel is shown in the red lines. So starting right about here, the channel will be moved a little bit. And these green, lime green depictions here are a series of steps that are created with boulders. And just to show you what that looks like, it's the exact same thing that was done here. So the boulders are installed below grade and are holding the soil in place, but they aren't aesthetically really noticeable at all. So So there'll be a series of steps to help stabilize the stream with a slightly realigned condition. One of the things that will also be a benefit of this is that right here, the stream bank is right up against the sewer line, which is about to be exposed and could be a significant issue if the erosion is allowed to continue. And so this will relocate the stream channel to protect that sewer line. And finally, at either end of the project here, there'll be some stabilization done. There's a stormwater outfall at this location with some accelerated erosion happening, that whole situation being improved. Staff has contacted the immediately adjacent landowners. We need to go through not only to get permission for construction on the site, we also need to get their approval for environmental permitting purposes. We need to get state and federal environmental permits. And so, so we're in the process of contacting and working with the landowners to get that. We've got four of these, probably seven landowners. We've got that permission and just waiting to hear back from a couple of others. And so the schedule for this project would be to complete the planning and design and preliminary engineering work in the next couple of months in the environmental permitting, and then hopefully begin construction this fall, try to get in this season. And at the other end of the actual grading work, there'll be native plant reestablishment to
to create a very healthy forest community adjacent to the creek. And that planting will continue next year as needed as under the grant activity. So this is all being supported with federal money.
Randy, would you show us where on that slide the Pacifica is?
So, yeah, this is Pacifica's right on the edge here. This is the easement that runs down along Pacifica. So I don't know if you know there's a stormwater pond.
Yeah, good. I was going to ask about that.
It's right about here.
What is the status of that? Is that holding its own now? Because I remember working with Rich McLaughlin from NC State on putting, I guess, flocculant logs in there. And
We did an inspection of the stormwater devices at Pacifica, and they checked out really well. They're doing a good job with maintenance. This pond right here seems to be performing as designed. There's a rain garden right adjacent to it that seems to be somewhat of a hybrid between a rain garden and a wetland, and that's the one thing we're kind of monitoring with the Pacifica folks as to if that's creating any kind of problem. I don't think it is, but it's something we're carefully.
Randy, will this work on Dry Gulch exhaust the grant?
There's three activities on the grant. The McDougall project was supported, the Dry Gulch project supported, and then NC State's also doing some monitoring at Pacifica under the grant. And so, those are the three activities that have been funded and are being pursued. And right now we're right on track and budget and so forth. But, we'll have to get a little further down the line and get bids on the construction and so forth to see if there might be some money left after this. But at this point, that's the plan to spend the entire funding with those three activities.
Sammy, you wanted to say
something? This is upstream from the intersection where Pacifica would have had any effect on this.
Yes, that's correct. So moving on to our regulatory activities, the town's been operating as what's known as a Phase 2 community with an MPDS permit for the past 5 years. That permit ran out about this time last year, and so we've been waiting to have that permit renewed. To make a long story short, the state and EPA and all of the regulated Phase 2 communities, which is basically every community in North Carolina with less than 100,000 people, and the North Carolina League of Municipalities has been having a lot of back and forth about what's going to be in these next phase of these permits. As of right now, we're anticipating, we've submitted some comments to the state, and we're waiting to hear back with our final permit, which we're expecting to get sometime in the next few weeks or maybe a few months at the most. At this point, we do anticipate that there could be some new requirements for the town to pursue under our new permit. But until we get the final permit, we can't be certain exactly what they may be. In general, they look like they'll require additional administrative activities and additional reporting to the state at a minimum. The very first thing we'll have to do is create a stormwater management plan this fall and to include a public review process of that stormwater management plan. So that's just a heads up that's on the horizon. Any questions on the MPDS permit? And then finally, the Deer Lake rules, which have been in effect for a couple of years now. This is a list of all the different rules. What I've done with the different colors here is try to give some sense of which ones affect the town the most. The ones in white, it's not necessarily that we're completely not affected by them, but they're of lesser importance. The ones in green, we've already done something about in our town code and our ordinance. in the recent past, and the ones in yellow here are ones that are on the immediate horizon. Staff are working on developing an ordinance for new development, and the essence of that is that new development will be required to meet nitrogen and phosphorus requirements running off the site. This was something that we had anticipated several years ago and had a draft ordinance prepared, and until the rules were finalized, we didn't feel comfortable in going forward with it. And so we now have from the state their guidance on what they're looking for with these requirements, and the schedule is to go forward this summer with the finishing of the drafting of an ordinance, let the state staff review that, hold a public hearing, and then in 2012, the Environmental Management Commission will be looking at all of the jurisdictions in the Jordan Lake watershed and their new development ordinances and approving those next year.
Jay? I think others know more about this than I do, but from the little I know, there were significant changes in the department, both in its staffing and in its charge, and there have been changes to the citizens board or the appointed board, and that seems like I read something about the time limits being extended from a request from Greensboro, and that kind of irks me because we've been working on these issues. You know, we were green before it was cool to be green, and we've already taken the low-hanging fruit, and now people upstream of us don't even want to do the low-hanging fruit. So do you know yet the impacts of legislative changes and administrative changes in Raleigh?
Yeah, I've only had a conversation with Chapel Hill staff, and I haven't had a chance to look into any pending legislation at the General Assembly. What Chapel Hill staff reported that they were aware of was that there was a draft bill that would give the jurisdictions in the Haw River, that drain to the Haw River part of Jordan Lake into the what is known as the lower New Hope part. Mm-hmm. That's basically all of the jurisdictions except Chapel Hill, Carver, and Durham, to give them a four-year extension. And
they have an extension. We don't. So we have to deal with what they're dumping in the rivers.
So I don't know any more about, you know, where that is in the legislative process. I've just heard from Chapel.
Yeah, they may have even passed stuff. I know they're going back in session in 2 weeks.
July the 17th.
Yeah, so almost 3 weeks. But so things like the schedule that we're supposed to be operating under, is that still, has there been a change? Oh, you just don't know yet. I wouldn't expect you to know if, you know, I mean, it's all still up in the air.
Yeah, I have, what I can say is I haven't received any information about any pending change for our requirements from the staff.
Well, they've laid off a lot of staff.
About keeping us informed, but right. if it's still at the legislative state, we may, you know, wouldn't necessarily hear about
it. Or that, you know, the staff that does things like keeping us informed may no longer be there.
But what Jackie's saying is that, you know, if you know, these other areas, the Lower New Hope and the Haw, are given a four-year extension, that means that during those 4 years, you know, that we're going to be
dealing
still
with
responsible.
Their stuff.
Right. So, you know, like the nutrient loads and whatnot for us are not going to show any real improvement.
Would it be helpful for staff to do some research between now and next week to
That's
see
right.
if we can learn anything about more about what may be going on?
I'd appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that, and I really appreciate all you do on this, and I know nobody cares about this more than you do. So it may be that when we come back in August, get an update, unless there's action you need from us right now, because I don't think the fallout from their humongous staff cuts, you know,
Joel just said to me, doesn't matter what we do because nobody's going to be available to test it anyway. So it may be August before we really understand what all these changes mean. And I'd appreciate it if as you can during the summer, you keep up with it. Maybe the folks at Owosso might know something too, since they keep up with these things. I think it's tragic that when you think of all the work that our communities have done over the past almost 40 years to try and protect our water and to protect the water of those downstream from us, that it can be just on a whim. So thanks for everything you do, Randy.
Is that a motion?
I agree with that. I think, though, that it sounds like this is a process that would probably be taken into account if we're going to be compared to other communities, even though they may come in on it 4 years delayed. At least these improvements will be registered, unlike at previous times when we had done improvements, and there's that question as to whether we'll be counted, points for all those improvements. So that would be my main concern, to assure that this delay from other communities doesn't mean that somehow, as we go along, this doesn't get counted.
What's so sad is that beyond the points, this stuff really, really, really matters.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, we would be doing a good thing anyway.
Yeah,
it's just
we
a shame
be doing
that
it anyway.
We can't drag other people along with us, other communities.
And
but
we don't want to be undone.
Do you know if there have been any changes that will lessen our ability to enforce policies that protect our creeks and water supply?
If there's anything that has happened, I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
So, Jackie, I heard a motion in there to ask staff to look into this and report back in August?
Yeah, just to kind of figure, and I'm sure,
it'd be great.
Several ones of us will be.
And we do have a resolution.
Resolution.
Yeah, that's attachment A. But
okay.
let's just.
You don't want to pass attachment A?
I just had a question.
Do you need us to pass attachment A?
Yes, just a question on.
Hang on a minute.
I don't know how significant or to what degree we've talked about permeable pavings, like stones and for parking lots and those kinds of things, because I know recently you've seen a lot of developments, and if it's beneficial for groundwater or runoff, if those kinds of improvements have been considered.
It's definitely something that that we look at closely. One of the challenges with permeable pavement specifically is that the state only recognizes it as a stormwater measure to receive credit for water quality improvements further east in the state, where the native soils naturally drain well. In our soils around here, there's some evidence that without significant improvements to the native soils, that they just don't allow for infiltration at a rapid enough rate to have the kind of benefit that mm-hmm. might be expected. So, it's not a practice. There just has to, if it is something we're going to look at, we have to be aware that we may not receive from the state the credit we're looking for.
How about for trees that tend to get surrounded by pavement, and then the question of how they drink water? Mm-hmm. Would they benefit from permeable pavement?
I think they do. Yes. So because anything you can do to allow for natural infiltration process to occur,
look at the trees,
is beneficial to you.
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't know how. If it's something that's attractive to me, I'd love to see if we could pursue and explore that as an opportunity to consider for new developments to have those kinds of improvements. I know we have some of these at the town commons, and they seem to have green things growing on them. So, as a minimum, just to have green parking lots to reduce the heat island effect. seems like it would be valuable just on those grounds.
Okay, before we go too far afield, Jackie made a motion to ask staff for a report, and you and Sammy second. All those in favor?
Wait, I have a question for the attachments.
We have attachment A to.
Yeah, Randy, I had a quick question on the attachments. It's attachment, I think, B15, and it lists different stormwater retrofit opportunities sort of by priority. Okay, and my question is sort of by general priority. I just kind of wondered, was that just in terms of how big an impact they have right now, or how visible they are, or how far along they are? And one reason I was curious was because there was at least one private residence on the list. So I was just kind of curious as to how these were identified.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically a list that helps us in considering opportunity. Every year, as part of the Joint Lake Rules provisions for existing developments, we have to identify two potential retrofit opportunities that we could pursue to help meet those requirements. And this is the first year we've had to do that. And so between now and August, we'll be preparing a report to the state, and we will have to pick two. Mm-hmm. And every year we'll have to pick two additional ones. So this isn't, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, necessarily, but it's a general attempt to provide a first cut at priorities for improvements that, they basically have a couple of qualities to them. One is that they're will have a good nutrient reduction benefit associated with them, mm-hmm. and the second is that three things. Then they'll be cost effective, and then their feasibility looks, at least at an early level, it looks like there's no major constraints to moving forward with them. But obviously, with any private property, we would need the landowner's agreement to go forward.
And how did you find out about them? Just ones you're generally aware of or know about? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's a series of things. There's the Earth Tech study that was done in 2007. There was the study that was done by Tetra Tech prior to that, looking at basically all of Chapel Hill and Carborough and the surrounding areas and the Little and Morgan Creek drainages. And otherwise, it's just the experience we have on a day-to-day basis and going out in the community and seeing what opportunities might be out there.
Okay, great. Thanks.
That particular property, has, because it's, yeah. it floods out, yeah.
Right,
it's
yeah.
It's fairly well known. Okay, well,
are we going to?
So let's just vote on Jackie's motion, and then we'll do attach.
Randy has something to tell us.
Can I just make one more point here that I think is important for you all to be aware of, and that's this existing development part of the Jordan Lake Rules. We haven't had a chance to look in detail at what's going to be involved in complying with that, but basically in the next couple of years we have to identify opportunities, and then starting in 2014 we have to start pursuing these opportunities, and it's possible in 2023 as the rules are currently written that we could have to go from an 8% nitrogen reduction requirement to a 35% requirement, and a very, very early preliminary and I think probably conservative estimate of the fiscal impact for us in this 2014 to 2023 horizon is about $3 million. And the methods for calculating that are included in the staff report. But obviously, we have a lot of work to do in the near term to start planning for that level of impact. We just make sure you are aware of that. But this is the first time we've tried to, it's a very preliminary number, but it's the first time we've tried to put a number on it. Hmm.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah, about $40 million
a year,
give or take
change,
Goodness gracious.
Okay. So in the order in which they occurred. So the motion was made, seconded. This is Jackie's motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then opposed. Matter carries. Now, the attachment A.
I'll move attachment A.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed? Matter carries. And Sammy, you wanted to...
I just wanted at some point for staff to look into permeable pavement or parking as an option for developments to so that we can minimize the heat island effect and increase the amount of water that goes through our trees.
Can I ask him a clarifying question?
Sure, too.
Commercial or residential?
Could be both.
Retrofit or new?
Well, if I could get information about all of it, we'd be better informed and make the answer.
The reason why I'm asking the question, because if you're talking about downtown, most of downtown is concrete. So you have different issues with downtown than you do, say, for example, Carver Plaza, or I can't think of the one that's down the hill off Jones Ferry Road. What's that called?
Willow Creek.
Willow Creek. And so that's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So you're saying downtown has a lot of...
What I'm saying is that you would probably may not want to require it downtown because its infrastructure is there. And to save costs and encourage people to retrofit downtown when the opportunity is available, as opposed to places where there are less trees and you want more trees.
So yeah, I agree. But I think that, you know, hopefully staff would come back with, if that is an issue, pointing out that to be an issue, and then we can...
Let's just learn about it and
right.
see.
I'm just saying that to think about that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, because that would be kind of undoable. But.
Right.
Great. So the motion is to have staff look into
permeable pavement.
And maybe report back in the fall.
Commercial.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The matter carries.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, Randy, I want to thank you not only for guiding the environmental and environmental education opportunities, but also coordinating them with all those various groups. You've done a great job. Thanks.
And are we going to see you or somebody close to you on the 4th of July? Maybe. You never know.
All right. And now, staff update on feedback about the Weaver Street businesses concerning the street reopening celebration.
George and Matt, y'all drawing straws back there.
Through the short straw. Through the straw.
Good evening, everyone.
Hey, George.
As noted, I'm here to provide some feedback on the possible reopening celebration on Weaver Street, but let me preface that by saying if you've been down to East Weaver Street block the last 2 weeks, we've made considerable visible progress in getting the rock base down and in place, and the binder, what's called the binder course of asphalt for the last was put down the last 2 days. So we made some significant progress.
Yeah,
we're not done yet, please.
We're not letting them wipe our brow, huh?
Well, if requested, town staff did talk to the businesses. Annette Stone, Community and Economic Development Director, approached the owners or businesses of the Spotted Dog, Maple View, Beehive, Weaver Street Market, and Carmel. Each of the owners were asked if they had any concerns or objections to the idea of leaving Weaver Street closed for an additional day or two, if necessary, for an event that would open the street to pedestrians only before opening to vehicle traffic. The results of that were none of the businesses were opposed, with the exception of Carmel manager Nathan Million. Mr. Million did not feel that keeping the street closed the additional time for a street event would benefit Carmel Mall businesses. So that's that information. We also talked to the contractor, and even with the work remaining, it's still difficult to come up with a completion date, although, as you can tell, we're getting closer. Let me bore you just here with some things that need to be done. Of course, the binder course has been put down, but before we can put the finished surface, we have to adjust some utility castings, the manholes and water boxes. The bus turnout area in front of the Century Center still needs to be ground off, and we're making preparations for saw cutting in to replace the traffic loops that came out when the street was removed. So all that needs to be done before the surface course, which is the last roughly 2 inches of asphalt. If all goes well, the asphalt may be completed next week. That's the best I can tell you at this point. Then after the asphalt, we have the pavement markings. Usually there's a couple of days of curing. You don't want to go on the pavement right away with the putting down pavement markings. So depending on the timing of this, I'll throw this out that we may be able to even have it open for the July 4th parade. There's no guarantee, but I'm throwing that out there is that if the timing is correct and the asphalt was done, there will be a three-day weekend there period that potentially the road would be still closed. But possibly, depending on how tender, if you will, the asphalt is, we may be allowed to allow pedestrians and bikes, much like we have in past 4th of Julys.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll throw that out there as a possibility. If it's done sooner, let me add quickly that the contractor's concern is he doesn't want to be held up because he needs to get this block open so that he can move to the next block.
Right.
So the longer we delay where we're at, that's less time, delays in the opposite direction. So if we're done early next week, and we get everything completed, then we could possibly work on a day or two, but that would be in the middle of the week. I can't wait a whole week to make that decision.
Right.
If we're not done by Friday, we're not done. By not this Friday, but the following Friday, July 1st.
Right.
So, again, we're getting closer. You've got the feedback from the businesses. I'll just be very honest. We're being protective of the investment we're making out there, and I don't want to see it damaged by getting on it too soon and a few other things. So no trucks, no motorized equipment, maybe the pitter-patter of some feet and bicycles. That would be the extent, and that's if it still had some time to season a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that the people in bikes could walk on it, and the road would have to be closed anyway before cars are allowed on. Am I understanding correctly?
With the exception of if the asphalt has cured, because we've spent a lot of money
obviously
on that road.
Right, but the whole point is that there's a people can walk and bike before cars can be on it.
That's correct.
Because it's part of how the curing process
works. It has been cured.
Right. It's part of the curing process.
But there is no date certain.
The other point I wanted to make was I've heard of businesses on Weaver Street that have been helping each other out, and it's very encouraging to hear that, such as Carburitos, helping Spotted Dog and Balloons and Tunes. And also I heard of a fundraiser by the station, and I think this is actually an excellent opportunity for us to pursue what we've always wanted to do, which is to encourage small businesses to support one another and have the town be supportive of that effort as much as possible. I see this closing of the street as an opportunity to that end. I've talked to Mapleview Ice Cream, the Beehive, and the Spotted Dog, and they all have said that this would be helpful. Actually, Mapleview said that they get a lot more business when there's walking people in front of their businesses. So I personally believe that if there is an opportunity to synergize either with the 4th of July or on a weekend, and taking into account the fact that curing the road, walking and biking is something that can happen on the road before you can even open it to allow for cars and trucks, that we should definitely pursue that as a means for supporting local businesses.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think the issue for the staff is there is no date certain, and if you want to do something that's not well defined and just say, when and if the street can be walked on and ridden on with bikes, do it for a day, and it's as simple as that. I think that's
easy enough to do. If it's some sort of formal thing, unless it happens to the stars and the moon align correctly and it, you know, coincides with the 4th of July celebration, which would be great, but absent that, it's going to be very difficult from the staff standpoint to really do anything of significance because we don't know when the when.
Yeah, I totally agree and understand, and you know, it's a whole timing thing. But, yeah, you know, I know that when the construction happened and people didn't know that the road was going to be closed, that in that small period when people were able to walk and bike, it was used. So I'm not asking that staff invest time to organize anything or anything like that. Just being able to have that space closed and for it to be clearly known that it's okay for people to walk and bike, you know, not before it's been cured, that we should take advantage and use that space.
Jackie.
Just a clarifying question. I'm not opposed to the idea as long as it's secondary to the health of the road. So if it's, you know, if it coincides with that and
of course.
And we're positive, I mean, I'm not even sure that, you know, a couple hundred people tramping on it and pushing bicycles and pushing carriages is best for the road. But I don't understand why this isn't happening after the whole thing's done.
One reason is because this could be seen as a pilot for the whole thing and the beginning for people to hear about the bigger thing. And also because so many of the businesses that are there are being affected so badly, this is a way to kind of jumpstart and really start to promote for all the businesses that are going to be affected and for the ones that have been that are already affected to have there be some kind of collaboration happening. This is to support the businesses. This is a way in which to make the businesses that are going to be affected further down the road not be affected as much as the community understands that we're coming together to support them.
You know, let me try to make clear that I'm listening to what you just said and then earlier about maybe being on a weekend. There's no guarantee that this is going to be on a weekend.
Right. That's right.
I want to make sure that was whether it be July 1st weekend or right. This coming weekend or after. It's done when it's done,
right.
And then we can give you notice, and the contractor's willing to try to work with us, but again, he's anxious, and I am anxious, as well as other folks, to get this thing and keep it moving. We're a little behind schedule, so this whole aspect is kind of counter to what we've been trying to accomplish, so... it's difficult here to arrange this. So I wish I could be more specific, but I don't have a crystal ball on this.
And we just need to be really careful about, I'll reiterate what George says, it sort of happens when it happens. Mm-hmm. Because to try to time it and delay for several days and try to time it for a weekend or whatever, my experience in construction projects is a lost day or two on the front end is a week or two on the back end.
And that equals money.
Right. Yeah.
That equals money. And more overall inconvenience for all the businesses in and along Weaver Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that... Go ahead, Lydia.
I'm sorry. Finish your thought, and then I'll go.
No, go ahead.
Because mine's loosely related. So.
Loosely?
George may not know the answer to this. But if Weaver Street is not open... by the 4th of July, do you happen to know if the parade going to go down Main Street, or is it has? I imagine Parks and Rec has thought through where the People's Parade might go.
I believe they're meeting tomorrow to finally. David Poitras will be there to kind of provide the update. So there will be a parade exactly where folks congregate in the beginning. Is uncertain yet at this point, mm-hmm. but we'll probably, if the contractor has not moved down to the other block mm-hmm. by that time, then would either congregate on the lawn or nearby or go across the street, and I can't think of the word when a parade gets together, but we'll then go from that point and go down Weaver Street. Assemble is a good word.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Ox's muster.
Musters and military.
So as you know, as we're in a situation where you know it's only done when it's done, and I guess we need to hear from staff and know you know, I know you've been updating us daily on it, and then give us direction as when and if it makes sense to follow through.
Well, it might only be a day or two notice, I believe, George.
Exactly, it would have to be.
I mean, it's going to be almost a last-minute thing, because as we know from this project and other projects, it's sort of whatever we didn't expect between now and the time it opens. There'll be something we didn't count on, more than likely.
As Sammy said before, something that I think is important, I just want to underscore that the expectation is that staff is not giving notice to community necessarily, that this is they're not going to take that piece of the organization of the street closing on.
But if you could give notice to me, at least I could give notice to the community.
Is that acceptable? Realizing it would be maybe within 24 hours.
Yeah,
if,
of course.
There's this thing called rain that happens every so often that makes this really difficult. So it could be, depending if we haven't finished everything, ideally we would be done totally, including the pavement marking, and then we're done. And then the only thing that would hold folks up would be the weather, having the event. But prior to that, the things that we're talking about here don't take a lot of time. As an example, the last layer of asphalt will probably be put down in one day. But if it's scheduled and then it rains that day or the next day, then we're talking 3 or 4 days before it might get rescheduled. The same with the pavement marking at the end. So I guess I'll do our best. I'll be here next Tuesday to provide, to see if there's any more information. We'll have some stuff completed by then. But, the contractor is working with subcontractors, so he has some control over this. I can't tell him when to bring these folks always, so that's an unknown, too. There might be a change in scheduling, so that's why I keep getting back to as soon as we get to the very end, and then there's still no guarantee, but we'll provide as much notice. I guess we've got to figure out how that's done.
Jackie, go ahead.
George, I want to be clear that the priority of this board is that road, mm-hmm. and is getting it done in the way that your professional judgment tells mm-hmm. you is the best way to get it done. We completely trust you in that. This event will happen if it can happen, but please do not feel that this board is telling you to put that event ahead of your professional judgment for how and when that road project needs to finish.
I believe I understand that. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah,
and even like to elaborate a little, I think this board understands that what we might get is an email from you one day saying we're done today, or we were done last night, and we find that out. We don't expect you to say we hope it's in 3 or 4 days and then give us updates.
Right.
I mean, it's
right. That's a good way of putting it. That's kind of what it's going to be.
And it's just like, if you can do it 24 hours in advance, that'd be great. But if you can't, then that's.
I want to clarify one other thing though regarding the asphalt. So if we were to get an email that said, well, 24 hours from today, would be workable, and the weather were a factor, I don't want the weather to compromise the work. And so I guess my question is, whose call would that be at that point?
Well, I think the board would
put it on the head. Jackie just said, this doesn't have to be so complicated. It's just you're doing whatever it is that you're going to do, and the day it finishes is the day it finishes. If you somehow find out 24 hours in advance and are able to give notice, then that would be great.
Yeah, I think what I tried to point out in the beginning is there's maybe two windows. There's the small window right at when we're done, the day, and it's all completed, and we're safe or safe in assuming that we can go on the asphalt. This other window is between when the asphalt finished and the pavement marking, which might create a natural window for having an event.
Okay.
And that is beneficial because it doesn't delay the contractor at all. So that's why I threw that out there.
Okay.
Whether it times with a three-day weekend, I don't know. But that it has that potential. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the more we talk about it, the more hung up I'm getting that the event is starting to drive our thinking. And I'm not comfortable. I'm just going to say right out, the more we talk about it, I'm not comfortable flying by the seat of our pants to make this happen. I actually cannot support this at this time. I'm real concerned that the weather is very iffy, and it would be great if we knew ahead of time that we wanted to do this event, but trying to shoehorn it in and make it fit, I'm more concerned that the engineering and the construction go exactly as the people who are doing the work planned it to go, because we have another piece of road to work on. So I'm sorry, Sammy. I like the idea in theory, but in practice, I think it's becoming a nightmare. And I
think it doesn't have to be a nightmare, but if people feel like it's like that, and that's how government works, then that's how
it's not how government works. It's how when you have to put in infrastructure. It's not.
But no one is saying we're going to override infrastructure. We told
you. Let me tell you something. I'm going to be patient with you, but let me just say this. We have spent an inordinate amount of time.
I find it ridiculous, too. This is my point. I'm willing to drop it. You know, it's absurd.
Good. I'm going on to the next thing.
Excuse me. Jackie, go ahead. Let's finish it up.
You thought you knew what you were getting into when you said you wanted to work for Carbo, didn't you? But you didn't, really. That was, you kind of have to live it to really get it. Really,
good thing
that's
you don't
right.
have to change infrastructure
right.
a yarn bomb.
But I think that there may still be a middle ground. And the way I'd like to leave it would be when it's finished, and when it's completely finished, and when it's completely in keeping with George's mental health, and with the good of the project, that George will tell us, and he will tell us how much time we have, and if that time happens to coincide with the ability to do an event, then fine, the event will happen. If it doesn't, then the event doesn't happen. How would that be with you?
What we were discussing.
Yes.
I understand.
Yes.
Yes.
Good. Well, this gives me comments for government. Local government is.
Okay. So why don't we move on to.
Like so insensitive that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, which is fix.
Let's just vote on it. I'm happy to.
Okay. So I'd like to move that we go with George's original proposal before we went into that. Would you second that?
Thank you. I second that. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Nay. Okay.
Thanks, George.
And apologies for having to drive that out.
How about we name that little block after you, huh? How about we?
George.
As we.
It'd be just the right size.
That's
it?
Right. The George
size. Okay. The energy efficient program update.
Okay. Randy, you back up? Randy Dodd's going to provide an update and ask you all to approve the residential program design.
I can just see him raining.
So this is a continuation of the same program that we've brought to you before that launched our Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund. Tonight the focus is on the residential side of this program. So previously back in December, you all approved a budget that included out of the total $75,000 that we received from the Southeast Energy Efficiency Alliance, a $5,000 allocation of that total budget to use for a residential assessment subsidy. And we have just been able to pull all the pieces together to allow us to start promoting that to the community. That basically involves up to $150 per resident subsidy to perform an energy efficiency assessment.
We also have had the good opportunity come forward by working collaboratively with Duke Energy and Chapel Hill to launch a program that seems like it's an exciting opportunity, where Duke is essentially, and all the details of this are in the staff report, but Duke is basically providing up to a $425 subsidy per residence to perform specific improvements that involve improvements to the building envelope for energy efficiency, so air sealing and insulation improvements. And we have a tri-party agreement worked out with Chapel Hill and Duke Energy to go forward with that. The main thing, I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions you have about either of those efforts. And we'll have some points to respond to specifically about an email that was sent earlier today about an aspect of that, and have some points to make there. But we also today are asking for your endorsement of some recommended enhancements that basically would mean that in the event that we're able to get some additional funding from SEIA, they have a pool of money that has some discretion to their being able to make it available to the 12 communities that are working with them, that we may be able to get $50,000 over the course of this summer, and we don't want to be sitting around waiting to have that the design of this program finalized in the event that opportunity does come along for us. So the main thing tonight was to look at the recommended residential program in the event that we are able to get some additional funding to go forward. Just to step back for just a second and look at the big picture, these are the basic program goals to reduce energy consumption per building at minimum of 15% to 20%, to reduce energy bills for the owner, create jobs, and to pilot and test ways to expand the market. So we're looking at this is a market transformation kind of initiative. And we want to maximize our ability to get additional federal funds in the future and to identify sources to help leverage those funds. The residential program for our assessment subsidies and the Duke Energy program, we just released, and I've already kind of gone over this, that the Duke Energy initiative, they've agreed to work with a minimum of 100 homes or a starting point, a pilot point of 100 homes. There's some chance, and if this goes well, and our desire is to make this a success, is that they will want to expand this program to more than 100 homes in the future. So this is just seen as a pilot to test the feasibility and the success of this. Duke is providing all the funding. They provide training to contractors. They have Advanced Energy provide that training. They're recognized as a leader in the state in this field. And really the nature of the partnership is that what we're providing to Duke is that we've created this program and this administrative ability to work with our community and to work with contractors to help Duke roll this money out. So we're sort of helping staff an initiative for Duke, and they're helping provide the funding. That's sort of the fundamental nature of the partnership. Chapel Hill did release a residential program this past spring, they very quickly reached their capacity. The high points for their design are that they provide a 50% subsidy for building envelope improvements and a 25% subsidy for measures focusing on systems and appliances, with a maximum of subsidy per building of per residential building of $5,000. Essentially, what we're recommending in our draft program design is to use their program as a template and just make some very minor modifications to it that are completely complementary, but I think have consistent with the amount of funding that we have available and consistent with what we learned through, at least at this early point, through their testing, and that's to lower the subsidy amounts just very slightly to allow our money to go farther and also to have a maximum subsidy of $2,000 rather than $5,000 to also allow our money to go farther. Now, this is, you know, the first rollout. It's really a test. We're sort of testing the market, if you will, and so hopefully we'll learn something through this. But these numbers are totally open for future modification as needed based on what we learn and in the rollout of this program.
Randy? Would it, and maybe Chapel Hill is instructive, would it be first come, first serve?
Yes.
Okay.
First come, first serve.
How do you know, for example, if you're not at home watching this with popcorn, how would you know about the program? I mean, how is the program communicated to the citizens?
So what we've done so far is we put this information up on the town website, and Matt did a big broadcast last week, and he can provide details on exactly who that goes. But basically, you know, the full range of all of our electronic dissemination of information. And so, you know, we also have given sort of advance notice that this was coming over the past 6 months. So there are people who have been actually calling every so often, you know, when are you going to release this? So, you know, I can look to other folks here to give some sense of how quickly the word will get out and how fast people may line up to become involved. But my sense is, I think we'll probably get pretty quick response, and if it's not coming in as fast as we hope for, then we can look to other measures to further get.
Well, I guess my concern is that if you're not on the internet and so you're not on that electronic list, but you may want to avail yourself of this program, how in the world would you know? And that's my point. And I don't necessarily want there to be an advantage because you may have a computer. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody has a computer, because we know there's a vast digital divide, not just in this area, but in the entire state of North Carolina. If you're in a rural part of the area, of course you're not in Carver, but my point is that not everybody who's living in Carver is on the list. Mm-hmm. And my suggestion may be that there may be something that could, like a little thing, could be put in the citizen or something, mm-hmm. I don't know. With a small amount of money, I'm not suggesting a lot of money, but I'm just saying that, or just think about it, and maybe staff, after this first run, could say, okay, we may not be, because some of the people who actually need the subsidy the most may not be able to avail themselves of, and that's my concern.
Mm-hmm. I'll second what you're saying, Joel. I know that there's this whole other weatherization program, the Weatherization Assistance Program, and that they've been struggling to get people to sign on to their program, and it may be related to this same factor. I was really encouraged to see that with this program we'll be promoting that weatherization assistance program, but again, concerned for the reasons that Joel gave. We need to be creative because we may fall into the same issues that JACA has as they've tried to promote their low-income program. So we have to really find ways in which we can connect. And I know that it's very short notice, but I spoke with Doug Dixon, and they, if they receive applications this week, have as quick of a turnaround as 2 weeks for being able to do weatherization retrofits for up to 50 houses. So I know, that's really short notice. We may not have the capability to promote that, but it would be really valuable if people at least heard about it through this. Looks like Matt has a point to make.
While Matt's coming up, I think everybody knows this, but just a reminder, we don't have this $50,000 yet. So the first thing is to is to get the
Right.
And I'm not suggesting that we all not talk about ways to promote it, because I think it's important to make sure we're reaching the folks who need it the most. But we can't yet spend what we don't have.
Right.
And in response, Joel, to your question and to, to Sammy's email from yesterday, staff has been working with JACA and with Orange County Tax Assessor to identify homestead exemption recipients and the Orange County Rehab List to identify lower-income properties. We've met personally with some homeowners in lower-income areas to provide information for this property. This afternoon, in response to Sammy's email from yesterday, staff contacted JACA, and we are working on a response to what you asked for, and hope to have an answer for that tomorrow.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, great. I don't have any more questions.
Great work, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks. Thank you.
I had a related question. Randy, between the weatherization program and the energy assessment program, is there any connection with the job skill programming that's being done at Orange County campus of Durham Tech? Is there any coordination? Because one of the things that we've talked about over the past several years is starting to create job skills.
So the essence of your question is about training the workforce preparation for this effort.
Right.
When staff has tracked what's going on out at the Orange County campus of Durham Tech, and have worked with our contractors, I mean, I think the at this stage, our focus is on, you know, it's sort of implicit in the design that this training is going to happen. I mean, these contractors are having to gear up and staff up to do this work. The SEIA grant funds do not have a focus on workforce development. And they're really about doing the retrofits. And so we're somewhat constrained in that sense from the grant's point of view to use these fundings for workforce development and training. But, you know, I completely understand the question that we need to be as carefully coordinating these things as possible. But I think, you know, at this point our focus has been on getting the program set up.
Right. And so maybe in the next phase.
Yeah, so.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'd like us to be able to think about that. Okay. Did you have something else?
Yeah, I just had a quick question on understanding that the GX participation is a pilot program, and that this is partly to demonstrate that we can put something together and have people want to participate in it, and the success in that leading us to get more funding possibly. The question being, if Duke were to decide that they were only going to do that 100 households and want to participate in the future, would that jeopardize how we would be weighted as we compete?
No. No, it's. I mean, the great advantage of the program is that we're able to use the Duke money as leverage money for working with CS. But there's no obligation or penalty or risk really at all.
So, yeah, I agree.
I did want to respond specifically to the question about making homeowner energy usage information available that was shared in email this morning, and making these points that we, in our programs, we include provision for participants of the program to opt in or make their power bills public if they so choose, and also that we add to the memorandum of Duke something to the effect of Duke Energy will facilitate the monthly power bills of participating households that opt in. And basically, the way our program's designed, the utility bills, one of the things, that the very first thing is that when someone fills out a participation agreement form is that they agree to provide utility bills for the previous 12 months. And then if they go forward with improvements for 12 months of post-improvement utility bills, so we're getting that information through the program. Had a conversation with Duke Energy staff. She couldn't speak for their organization as a whole in terms of what assistance they may be able to provide with this. But they are in principle interested in providing what assistance they might. They have worked with a couple of other municipalities in the state in a similar vein. The monthly level might be more time intensive than they're able to provide much staff assistance with. But, you know, so that's a little bit of an open question at this point in time. But, you know, just want to make clear that the way the program is designed, we're going to be getting this information. And I think the question might be, you know, and so once it comes to us as a public body, you know, in essence, that information is held in the public trust. I think the question might be a little bit more about publicity and then whether we want to try to
make use of that.
Yeah, to use that information in some way. And a couple of points I wanted to make here is that Southeast Energy Efficiency Alliance is providing they're funding at great cost for all participating communities the development of an information technology tool that basically, you know, have lots of features, but for this particular question, it could greatly facilitate the gathering of this kind of information. And we're the third community in line to be working with SEIA to implement that tool. So that's something that we'll be looking at in the coming months.
Randy, I also understand that through ICLEI, don't we have a tool that the various departments can use to compare their energy? And if that's the case, would that be applicable? Could we use that tool also for opt-in residents or as residences that provide their utilities?
I'm not personally intimately familiar with that tool, but it's not a data gathering from the source tool. There's still a manual step that's involved in that. And this is, in essence, the homeowner at the front end gives their information on the web, and then it's all mined and integrated to everyone who's interested in it.
Cool.
So there's not very much manual. You know, the idea is there wouldn't be very much manual activity. The other point here to make is that we had a discussion this afternoon. I think it's our sense that there are likely a number of residents that may be willing to make their data available, but they want to maintain some level of confidentiality or privacy. They don't want their raw utility data out there for anyone to see. And so so we see the value most likely being in looking at, if someone wants to compare their usage with their neighbor's usage, what they would be comparing wouldn't be individual private data about, you know, person X, Y, or Z's utility bills, but it would be an aggregated energy usage value that then they can compare their own home with to their adjacent properties. And I think, you know, we all agree that there's value in that. I mean, that your point that these neighborhood competitions have shown to be effective, I think that point is
and if there's a way to opt in to make your name be known, because I know people who would want to do that, and I've participated in some of these neighborhood groups, and that would help with the contest, you know. But obviously an opt-in, people explicitly say I want my name to be public, then if there are means to do that, that would be helpful for some of these projects.
Yeah, let's do that with water.
Let's do that with water.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe we can use the same tool.
In neon downtown.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's a different topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically our recommendation on this point is that that we explore a program design enhancement for board review, you know, some point later this year to encourage neighborhood competition that includes making current and future aggregate energy usage data available. And that also we modify we modify the participation form to include an opt-in line on the form for a participant who's interested to check, basically.
Cool.
And then there's other program design elements that are included in the packet. I won't really talk about this. We do have three contractors currently enrolled or pre-qualified, and a fourth that is also working in Chapel Hill, and it's likely or possible that they will also. We just haven't finalized the paperwork with them yet. At that point, this is our pre-qualified contractor network. These three and possibly four companies. And so our plans in the upcoming weeks are to attempt to secure this discretionary funding from SEIA, to be working on a longer-term sustaining plan for this program, to continue to look at the results of Chapel Hill's residential program. This summer, the first-year memorandum of agreement will be running out, so we'll be needing to update that agreement with Chapel Hill. And also to be reviewing our on the commercial side that, and actually next week we hope to be able to bring one loan application for your review for that program.
Good.
Oh, thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank you.
Well,
all right.
There's two resolutions.
The agenda abstract said one of two resolutions provided, but I believe there was an editorial and there's only one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask, because it says two, one accepting the report and the other approving. So it's attachment A.
Attachment A, yes.
Yeah.
I'll move attachment A.
I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? And that carries. Thank you, Randy, for this work. And thank Maura
thank you, Randy.
For her work, too. Okay. And now we're on to our last item, which is continued discussion of town management recruiting process. So, Jackie, go ahead.
I appreciate all the work that staff's done to bring these proposals to us. I am reluctant to say anything that's not positive about a company that has gone through the effort to put a proposal before us. So in that light, I'd like to talk about the two proposals that I do like and not the ones that I have some issues with, because they're all good businesses. I was very impressed with Springstead. I think they did a better job than anybody of truly addressing the questions that we had in our RFP. And it wasn't a boilerplate. It wasn't a boilerplate proposal. It really went through and addressed what we were looking for and how we were looking for it. The other one that I really liked was Slavin. One thing that they did that was different and that I liked in their proposal is that they actually visit the work site where somebody is and get an idea of that. What I'd like to propose is that we have a face-to-face interview with representatives from these firms, but as a way of seeing, kind of stretching the technology, and I know the technology is available we use it in college recruiting, rather than spending the money and having them spend the money to come down here, could we do a video interview? Could we Skype something in and have, like, conversations with representatives from these two firms so we can, I don't see a tech genius head here. I think from their end, they actually, if they're recruiting firms, they ought to be able to do it. But rather than have them go through the time and expense, I know you're dying to jump in. So,
I really don't know what we can or can't do on that. I'll just share a concern, if I may, and that is if they're face-to-face here, there's no question about the ability to communicate.
Okay.
We have a technical issue, and you've set aside the time to do it, then something may get lost there. And that's
right.
My concern. I believe these firms
If they want the contract, they know how to do this.
To do recruitment.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just a part of their cost of doing business.
Okay.
And I believe, I don't know Slave, and I know Springstead very well because they've done a lot of work here, but they're both,
yeah,
all four of these companies are very reputable,
right,
companies. I think any of them would probably want to be,
okay,
here face-to-face with you all.
So I'd like to move that we find a time as soon as possible when all the board's here to invite Slavin and Springstead to come and interview with us.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Just with the request, because I think we did it last time we interviewed firms, that the board have a fixed set of questions,
mm-hmm,
so that that everyone is asked the same question.
Maybe we could have something sent to us ahead of time asking board members to to submit questions, not submit them for approval, but just so that
right,
we will have a list.
Any other discussion?
I'm in agreement with what you're proposing, and I guess my question is to looking at time frame. I think we talked about maybe early July.
Yeah, and Joel's going to Italy, so we have to do it before Joel goes to Italy.
I'm out the 19th. Somebody will be staying at the house, though. Those of you who think that there ain't going to be nobody at the house, although there ain't nothing to steal. But there'll be somebody at the house.
So who's ever staying in the house can come to the meeting for you.
Yeah, are they going to sit in for you?
I don't think she'll want to do it. But,
so back to time frame. If Joel is going to be out.
I'm going to be gone the 20th through the 31st. So I'll be back.
July.
I mean, we want to get rolling on this pretty soon. We have one more meeting left.
28th, yeah.
The 28th.
Mm-hmm.
The following Tuesday is July the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Are people around on July the 5th?
I'm around on
July 5th.
I am also. The day after a holiday, I assume the people can travel, but it's fine for me.
Well, are we necessarily stuck with a Tuesday? We're not necessarily stuck with a Tuesday.
No, we're not.
Right, we can do Thursday the 7th if we thought that was a concern.
Yeah, how about?
Can do Thursday.
Or Wednesday, whatever.
We can contact the firms. I think if you want, I don't know if you want what kind of staff involvement, if any, that you
want.
Well,
we need somebody here taking notes and kind of facilitating.
Desiree's on vacation that week. That's
okay.
But Kathy's here.
And it's going to be a meeting, so somebody...
Yeah, it has to be a public meeting.
Yeah, it'll be a public meeting.
And so we have to announce it.
Right.
We don't know the mayor's schedule, and he's
going to be with us. Kathy made a good point. Would you all perhaps want to suggest 2 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to be on the safe side.
Yeah. Perhaps there could be, if you could email us tomorrow and maybe... I'm here that
you know,
I'm not going anywhere. Who's going somewhere?
That whole week, either
right,
the 6th or 7th, is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay.
If we're all here.
So, if you email us maybe those 3 dates, and that way, Dan and Mark can weigh in.
Do you want us to go ahead and contact the two firms and tell
And tell them we'd like to interview them.
One of those days.
Right.
But, well, we don't know Dan and Mark's availability yet.
But when Kathy sends the email,
yeah,
we might have a better feel for
right,
that. But I just want to be certain before we go on that folks are comfortable narrowing down the field to these two.
I am.
All right.
Well, we can vote.
But we don't necessarily have to.
We can. Anyway.
Can we vote on anything?
But if we want to, so Jackie, let's. Do we have a second fee motion?
Yeah.
Seconded.
All right. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And then opposed? The matter passes. And
I know it's a lot of us.
Kathy, in that motion, can we include the request of staff to send the email to the board about the dates to meet.
Yeah, I think we agreed that if we could do 5th, 6th, and 7th, that would be great.
Yeah.
Right.
And just to confirm, in the evening.
In the evening,
yes.
Yeah.
Does it have to be 7:30, or could it be 7 or 6:30?
Is this 5th, 6th, and 7th?
Yeah.
What time were we thinking on?
Anytime after 6.
Okay.
And how much time do you want to set aside for each?
An hour with each, you think?
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, 1 hour.
Yeah, and if we want to, I mean, we could start earlier, right, folks?
I could start early.
Good. I can start at 5:30. Yeah.
I can start better. I can start at 6.
I can start at 6.
Okay.
And if we can have, like, sandwiches or something for us and the people we're interviewing, if we're going to start at 6.
If you just let me know the date, I can plan to be here.
Okay.
All right.
So we have to talk to Mark and Dan.
Yeah, that, and if you're sending an email.
I'll send an email tomorrow with July 5th, 6th, or 7th in the evening to get some time.
Starting at around 6.
Starting at around 6.
Because the time may be a factor for either one of those as well.
Okay.
And then we'll contact the two firms.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just, wanting to at least acknowledge that we received this OASA letter, and I'm just not sure if there's anything we can do, given that we've already expressed our position, and I'm not real clear as to what exactly OASA expects us to do. It seems like they've moved with their action, and we've been very clear, and actually even not even acknowledged in their resolution for our accurately in our position. So. So I just wanted to make note that we got the letter. We just, feel like we've expressed ourselves and unfortunately haven't been heard.
Is that a motion? Because I might vote against that.
I disagree
with your position on Washington. And I was consistent about voting against
that doesn't have to be a motion. I just wanted to point it out.
Okay, Doug.
Good point.
Matters by the town manager, town attorney. I had something I wanted to bring up. Clerk? Kathy? Anything?
No.
Okay. I had something I wanted to bring up. Next week is the last meeting, and I was hoping to ask the board to support having Bob Hornick look into amending the town code for the Greenways Commission so that we undesignate the seats. Last year, March 16th, we approved the reconfiguration of the Greenway Commission so that there would be fewer seats, and in doing so, we undesignated a seat, for example, for the Chapel Hill Carver City Schools. There are only two designated seats remaining. One is the Morgan Creek Alliance, which has one person who's sitting on the board, and the other is the Friends of Bowling Creek. And, I think it... having designated seats has been part of the just part of what has made the Greenways Commission not a fluid commission. And I think one of the things that I think would help the community is by having the two seats that are designated be at large. I think that way we ensure greater community involvement.
Well, I think we can discuss it. I don't know if I still have an opinion about it. And here's my other concern. I don't want just people who serve on organizations. Sometimes the designation limits people, so there's only expectation that the organization only has one seat. So I'm mulling it in my mind about,
Well, let me put it this way. When Jackie and I, ran the summit, Friends of Bowling Creek was the only game in town, and now there's not. So, there's you know, there's a, you know, a strong concern in the community that if Friends of Bowling Creek has a seat, everybody else, that all the other permutations will have to have a seat.
Mandy, I think this is a more in-depth conversation that could be an agenda item. And I also think it's one that Mark and Dan need to be a part of. You know, so, I mean, I could support our trying to talk about it next week, but I think it's too, it has political implications, and it has structural and staff implications. So I think it's better, I'm glad you brought it up, but I think maybe bring it up and ask that it be an agenda item so that we can do like a full discussion of it, and so Mark and Dan have an opportunity to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, because I have some points I would want to make about it, but I think it will be better if we're all here and kind of can think it through and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have a problem with that, but I really feel like I needed to bring it to your all's attention because a year ago, you know, we started to look at the configuration, and before we look at making the new appointments, you know, it would make sense to at least have the language in front of us were we to amend the town code.
Mm-hmm. But also, I think that there needs to be some set of expectations spoken to all members of any advisory board and what the set of expectations are. Mm-hmm. And that might be unclear, and that sometimes becomes unclear over time. So mm-hmm. that would be my suggestion. Because mm-hmm. you may not all be reading out of the same hymn on the same song page. So
definitely
something to think about.
So can we agree to have it on next week's agenda?
Well, I guess the question is, what else is on next week's agenda, and how long is that going to be?
Everything that was left over.
We've got an update on the NSA design workshop. There's a budget amendment, which shouldn't be any significance. The appointments to the Greenway Commission, bringing back the changes to the personnel policy based on what you all discussed tonight. That's not on here, but there's a potential for a loan application for you all to review for the energy revolving loan fund.
Right.
And then we had asked to have a report on what was brought to us this evening by the two gentlemen.
Right. You got that, and then an update on Weaver Street.
So it's a bunch of, like, 15 minutes.
Now, are the appointments to the Greenways Commission, they're not involved with this?
Well, they should kind of coincide.
No, but if we, right, I don't think that they are, really. But
so
I think it's...
This is also more for, is it November, December, we take our applications generally for the upcoming. So this is something that we need to talk about, but certainly try to get it...
Well, there are appointments for next time that are scheduled.
It could be.
I mean, for next meeting.
Could
unless
be
you all decide
could be
not
those
to.
Seats.
Right.
Could be
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I got you. Well, then we have
so, I mean, I think if the board wants to address it before the summer break, I think we can make that happen. And the other question is, do you want the attorney to draft anything to look at or not?
I don't know if we can say that without the other remaining people on the board on it, because we know it's going to be a topic of great discussion.
Well, I mean, to have the attorney draft something doesn't mean that we're going to accept it. It's just something to look at.
But what would he even be drafting?
Right.
Because
I don't know if the board has a, if you will, a majority will on what it is that they want to change, if anything.
Well,
that's my point. I'm not
very, very simply put, you know, changing the designation of seats that are for specific groups, Morgan Creek Alliance, Friends of Bowling Creek, to at-large seats. Because one of the things that happened...
Okay, I'm not going to discuss it anymore. He can do it. I'm ready to go home. If the rest of you that have drafted it, it's only two or a couple of words, I'm ready to go home. And I don't think we should have the discussion because we already talked about it. We didn't want to go to discussion. I think everybody understands the issues.
So I think that it's fine with me if you want to ask him to make it undesignated as an amendment to the ordinance or the charge, and we'll go from there, and we'll decide if that's what we're going to do next Tuesday.
Right. And the reality is, if we do or don't make a decision next week, if we then take it up in August, that group won't meet maybe more than once between now and then. If we had to end up making some kind of a change, because I don't know that they're going to be meeting in July anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the boards don't. You know, most of the boards don't.
Or they shouldn't.
It's just a thought. I mean, it's just something else.
So the overall goal here is to make sure that we have a meeting that'll make Steve really glad he's retired. Yeah, that's like
you're getting there.
That's the goal of the
close.
Yeah,
close. So close. We could just push one more thing on there.
There you go.
Just about two more, and you'll be there.
How about changing pay scales? Why don't we do like a revisit?
Let's revisit that.
Yeah.
Let's revisit
that.
Well, if that's okay, I'd like to be able to do that then.
Yes.
Okay. So it's okay to ask.
Yes. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Motion to adjourn is seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you.
Meeting.